Myelofibrosis will come to a patient in a different form and shape. We know that about 80% of the patients will have progressive organ megaly, spleen, and liver, maybe enlarged liver. In about 40% of patients, almost everybody over time have progressive cytopenias, and about a third will become transfusion dependent. And this is coupled with the progressive constitutional symptoms, night sweating, low-grade fevers, itching, loss of weight, and cachexia, leading to decreased quality of life and performance status. This is slow death for me. I saw that patients when I started in MPN 12 years ago. There was nothing to do. Now we can do things for these patients, but we still have an issue of myelofibrosis-related complications and progression to acute myeloid leukemia, all leading to premature death. We need to realize that acute myeloid leukemia only happens in about 20 to 25% of patients. So as a one item, it's a leading cause of death. But 70 to 75% of patients die from myelofibrosis-related complications. So it is myelofibrosis that we need to control better. The question is there still a need for splenectomy in myelofibrosis?
What's the answer? Have you had sent any patients for a splenectomy in the last year?
Yes, but not often. There are still indications, but the associated risks are serious risks.
How about splenic irradiation?
Last resort. After assessing patients for a splenectomy, then you go to radiation. Now, acute myeloid leukemia can develop in up to 20-25% of myelofibrosis patients, occasionally directly from ET or PV, but it is a terrible condition for the patients. Median survival is somewhere about 5 to 7 months, not years, months. And really, there is not much you can do. You can watch the patient, you can give them intensive chemotherapy, and really nothing works unless with intensive chemotherapy you get them to CR, which is possible in about only a third of the patients. Not 70%. Only about a third of the patients will go to CR after intensive chemotherapy. And only those that go directly to transplant have a chance of a long life. Otherwise, they relapse right away. And indeed, there is no much difference between phase one study, observation, or intensive chemotherapy without the transplant in terms of their survival. So you do not engage anymore. And this is something for clinical practice very important. In induction chemotherapy, unless there is immediate transplant possibility, what we learn over the last 5 years is that hypomethylation agents, like azacitidine, on their own have activity in accelerated or blastic phase MPN. That means 10 to 20 or 20 plus percent of blasts after MPN. This is accelerated blastic phase MPN. Hypomethylation agents have activity. They can be given in outpatient setting, and a life can be longer, not 5 to 7 months. It can be a year and a half to 2 years. And we treat people not for CR, it is possible, but for a control of the disease for as long as possible with hypomethylation agents, as it's coming up in NCCN guidelines, for example, that were published in October online here in the United States. For accelerated blastic phase, hypomethylation agents, with or without JAK inhibitors for spleen and symptoms. With the combination, you can actually do a good job in improving quality of life and preventing further progression of the disease. That would be standard practice.